This is CliffCentral.com.
Yes, good morning, it's Wednesday. Let's get cracking. Today's actually like a mini Friday, so we don't have to stress too much.
It is.
By the way, we are not here tomorrow for the public holiday, and in good, true South African fashion, we're taking Friday off as well. You know?
Anyone who didn't think of taking leave that potentially could have done so, unlucky for you.
Well, not unlucky, bad planning. You should have thought about that, because if you take off just the Friday, and there's another weekend coming up, because April is pockmarked with public holidays, and then May as well because of elections. We got Workers' Day at the beginning of May, but now you've also got Election Day, which is a public holiday. So if you plan it really well, I mean, you don't even need to go away, but you could have a super long weekend. At least one in April, at least one in May, and at least one now, if you think it through.
It's not like we've got much work to do, seeing as we have no power.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Ben put up the saddest thing on social media. It's such a sad thing. Do you want to hear about it?
Please tell us.
It's a sad situation.
You know, Ben has this lamp. It's a cat lamp. So there's a glow-in-the-dark type thing.
But it's a small cat lamp. I mean, this thing is tiny. And so basically, it's a tiny white cat, and it's got this lamp in its abdomen.
Yes, and it's
or
right.
a lampdomen, as we
And his caption, your caption, read your caption.
The caption is very sad. South Africa, a place so dim, this little guy is actually worth so much. Shitholonomics, hashtag.
Shitholonomics.
Because shitholonomics has got us here. Because we would rather be woke than actually smart.
Yes. And I spoke to a couple of people yesterday. Millennials, you know.
Good, that must have been your favorite time of your life.
Where's this going?
Well, no, occasionally you meet really smart millennials and occasionally you don't. I mean, it's like any other age group. I mean, you want to sit with baby boomers all day, you're going to get very fucking frustrated too. And Gen X's and Gen Z's and all the
and people who classify people.
Yeah, I know.
Those
are
but,
I mean,
words.
I'm talking about people of a certain age group, and they're all like massive fans of socialism. They're all like, yeah. That sounds like a good theory because everything's much more fair.
Dumbasses.
I'm like, do you guys realize that socialism is what makes Eskom the fuck up it is? And they went, huh? I said, look, you realize socialism isn't just this thing imposed by the heavens. That everybody's suddenly the same and everybody's equal, everybody has a say. You know, we can all go to the billionaire's house and take what we want. What it is the government tyrannizing you to make you the same as everyone else. And when the government is tyrannizing people, it distributes stuff equally. Now, at the moment, they don't have any electricity, so they're distributing it equally. So we all get the same amount of nothing. That's socialism. It's a great descriptor for you. If you're ever worried about how to explain, let's say you're writing an economics exam next week or something.
I have that problem all the time. Economics exams.
Yeah, let's say that they just creep up on you, you know. And you say to your professor, listen, I'd like to explain this a slightly different way. And they say, sure, you know, that's creative thinking. Go ahead. I'd like to use Eskom as an example of why socialism doesn't work. If your professor says, no, that's a bad example, then they shouldn't be your professor of economics anymore. And you can tell them I said so, and I can find you 100 sources that are better than them for proving that they're wrong. Because socialism is precisely what we see with Eskom. Here you have 100% government control over a certain commodity and resource, electricity, and they've 100% fucked it up. And it's because they're 100% socialist. There is no other descriptor necessary.
I didn't have any bloody power, and like my brain.
I saw you post
my brain.
Funny.
Yeah,
you said
fucking satanic mosquitoes are satanic vampire vampire bats of hell.
They're also another thing of load shedding. Hey?
They are fucking. Excuse me, I'm going to try not to swear because it's an impassioned topic for me. Mm. But they are actual vampire bats. What is the story of the vampire bat? Well, it's a flying demon of hell that flaps its wings, flies to where you are from where it is, lands upon your body and sucks the blood out of you and then possibly changes your health by doing so. It's just that actual vampire bats are little and they go
and they thrive on load shedding.
Gordon, like, what do they say?
They say it's like, bite me, you little shithead fuck, just don't wake me up with your squeaking sound. It's like It's like having an R&B singer come to take blood from you, but singing while they do it.
But yeah, just on that whole, like, at the moment you can't help but think politically and talk politically. And
it's because suddenly it's become a problem for all of us. Even the rich people are suddenly going, oh, hang on, this ineffective government shit really does have a sting.
Yeah.
But they get big-ass generators and, like, they've got solar panels on their roofs. And by they, I mean you, Gareth.
I don't have any of that.
You live in an estate, I bet.
I do not have a generator and I do not have solar panels on my roof. When the electricity goes, it goes. All I have is my torch on my cell phone and a few candles.
You sound like Bernie Sanders here, the way you're pointing at Gareth.
I want everybody to divide the wealth equally.
Do you?
I want electricity and hospitals and transport and Nike shoes to be free for everyone. And we must take more from the rich.
Nike
and
shoes give it are all, a priority.
Yes. Basic human rights.
Well, you're not going to heaven. But
we've known that for some time.
But something I realized this week is that obviously you get the political right, you get the political left. And when you start out in life and you're young and impressionable, mostly stupid and trying to get laid, you generally always try to say things that get attention, right? So that's the political left. But when you grow up,
I won't let you finish. But
But when you grow up and you start to actually have life issues and
responsibilities
and debt and challenges and people that need you, suddenly you become more conservative in your thinking. You swing more towards the right. Those that never grow up stay on the left.
Uh-huh. Yes, and when you stop being fun, like you point out, you also get no sense of humor for jokes, and you start shouting at Gareth for interrupting you, and life becomes a very serious place.
No, but there is that old saying that speaks to what Ben is talking about here.
Yeah.
That if you're young and you don't have a heart, I mean, if you're young and you're not a leftist, you don't have a heart. Right. If you're old and you don't have and you're not right, you don't have a brain.
Yeah, realistically though, I do agree with Ben.
Can't there be a middle ground?
You do like the idea of the spirit of something when you're younger, exactly. And less about the details.
Listen, yes, there we go. Let's move on, because I mean we're not going to solve the world's problems politically. Sia was telling me he's finally watched the opening couple of minutes of Finding Neverland, and I still have to see this. I haven't watched it yet. A part of me doesn't really want to watch it because, not because I'm a Michael Jackson fan and I don't want to ruin the idea I have of Michael Jackson, because I pretty much accept it.
Isn't Finding Neverland about the story about the guy that wrote Peter Pan and his friends with Freddie Highmore?
This documentary is called Leaving Neverland.
Oh, sorry. No. Yes, quite right.
Because I was like, the opening of that is beautiful. I'm like, that movie is one of 2003's best movies.
It's basically gorgeous, picturing something totally different.
Johnny Depp sitting on a bench in a park with Freddie Highmore, and they're both crying because the mom's died. I'm like, this is random, but I'm okay. My movie trivia is on point.
What did I get?
Yes, your movie trivia
is here.
Well done, Gord. Thank you for pointing that out. Leaving Neverland. So it's not because I'm a Michael Jackson fan. I accepted years ago he was probably a pedophile. It didn't change my opinion on his music. He was a genius with regard to music. You can be two things at once. You can both be a brilliant, talented musician and a sick
and a
pederast. Okay, so that's possible. I'm not an idiot. You can only see people one-dimensionally. It's the same as you can be a socialist and a very nice person. You can be a capitalist and a terrible human being. You could be all of these things.
Right.
So Michael Jackson isn't the issue of this thing for me. The reason I don't want to watch it is because I get really uncomfortable. Not because I've had personal experience in any respect. I was never abused. I never had a priest take advantage of me or an adult of any kind. I've never had any sexual molestation in my family, certainly not to my knowledge. I had a very happy childhood. It upsets me. It offends me on some level that I'm not entirely sure I know how to deal with, because when I think of kids, I think of them being innocent and happy and, you know, being able to do whatever they want to do and their parents
loving
them. It's not
fun. It's not fun stuff, dude.
And when you get into that dark part of humanity, it just blemishes the whole human race for me. And I'm not sure I could sit through 4 hours of watching stuff that will make me feel worse about humans than I already feel about them. Because the one place humans can still be nice is you know, kids, innocent children who, you know, are playing and are left to their own devices and their parents love them and blah, blah, blah. But I got to watch it because it's now everybody's talking about it.
Right. It's not going to shock you when the guy is talking about the fact that he was getting plowed by Michael Jackson.
Plowed?
You know, I see it on a point of really just learning more.
Yeah, so what have you... I mean, you've watched, what, 40 minutes? I mean,
as a young man yourself, how did it feel watching this?
At first, I was part of the entire train going, oh my goodness, it's 4 hours. Why is it so long? Couldn't they have, like, summed it all up in 90 minutes? Why does it have to, you know, labor the point? But already just watching.
Much molestation.
Yeah, exactly.
There's that much. There is.
There really is that
but
much.
But she was telling me about
like
the group.
Test match
just,
of molestation.
Yeah, just listen to this. So. It is like a test match. Sia was saying the grooming, they go through the details. They go through how much planning Michael Jackson put into his paedophilia.
On a conscious and subconscious level.
That was his real full-time job.
Yeah, so these two boys, it's Jimmy and Wade. Wade was from Australia, and he won a Michael Jackson dancing competition, like an impersonator
Wade
competition.
Wade Robson, I remember.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the way.
Well,
it's
quite twisted. And then the other kid, Jimmy, originally starred in a Pepsi ad with Michael. And that's how the two relationships formed with both of them. But from those moments, the relationship started brewing from Michael just calling the house randomly. And he started with, you know, talking to the mother of the kids.
Yeah. So he always made them feel at ease.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then painting this picture of, I'm so lonely. I'm at Neverland right now, or I'm at Havenhurst, which is a Jackson family home, alone, and there's no one for me to play with. And the mothers would say, come and have dinner with us. And that's how Michael got integrated into the family. And this, you know, like, it's the seduction and the thought behind it all. Michael would open up the entire world to these families, saying, where do you want to go in the world? And how long do you want to be there? And I'll take you there.
Now imagine
more do you want to hear?
Yeah, imagine having, like, a sugar daddy on tap, but he seems also like a really good guy. Because you don't,
and also the most famous person in the world.
Yes, and you don't pick up that there's any reason why you should say no to this. Because you look at him and you go, he can definitely afford it. So he's just doing this out of the goodness of his heart.
Yeah,
and it all starts with the entire family as a whole. Then, of course, because Michael has this friendly rapport with the little kids, the kids would say, oh, Mom, do you mind if I spend the night with Michael? You know, if they're all staying at one hotel room.
Assuming since the dude has a Disney palace for a house,
that
there must be like a spare room.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, you don't mind that at all, and you don't bring it up at all. But in the context of when they were on tour, the kid would want to sleep with Michael, and the family would be like, sure, because we're only three doors down. And in the next city, they'd be six doors away. Then in the next city, they'd be a floor away. So there was this distance slowly. Then the boys not knowing any better would not know what a sexual encounter is, but Michael would set the scene as saying,
I don't care how many rooms away you are.
Wait, listen to this.
Michael would set the scene saying, if you really love me, this is how you show me that you love me.
Yeah.
And it would be like, okay, play with me here, touch me there. And another thing is, this documentary does not shy away from any graphic
detail.
The
shit Gareth doesn't want to know about
goes
me either.
Right into where they were touched, how they were touched. It
can we not get
that.
The edited version where it goes, it cuts and it goes, bad things are described. 4 minutes, 21 seconds.
They just had the guy's face on Fire Festival, whatever it was.
Bad things to do with fiddling described.
So Sia tells me that apparently at Neverland, there was the train track, and then in the station house, there was a bed upstairs. And then there was a room in the house that was kind of hidden and off to the side with a bed in it.
It was a
like R. Kelly's black room.
Yeah.
R. Kelly had at least one
Except
black
Michael
room.
Michael Jackson slowly transitioned his into a white room over time.
Okay, good.
All right, but hang on.
What is?
I like that, but yes, but back to Sia.
For lack of a better term, it was a stunning scene because it's an aerial shot of the entire Neverland Ranch, and you just hear Jimmy narrating it, saying, oh yeah, that's the train house, there was a bed in the attic. Oh, that was a side house where there was Michael Jackson's memorabilia, we also had sex there. And then they show scenes of the private theater, saying, oh yeah, and then in the theater there was this bed that we used to have in there as well, and was separated by a one-way mirror, so if anyone were to come in, we would see them before they saw us. So basically they had sex everywhere.
So it was
the
like
grotto,
they should have called
jacuzzi.
It Offenland.
I mean, Offenland.
Okay, we
and
will
of course,
not
like this. This is like the bunny ranch for children.
Yeah,
I think they probably had a bunny ranch.
Oh, yeah. And Sia also told me there was this building, like a separate building up a like windy path where he would take the kids to.
Well, granted, it was just a random guest house, but it was so isolated from the main house at Neverland.
I mean, this is worse than Bird Island.
You would see people drive up from literally like a mile away, given how big that property is.
But all in all,
we've been hearing people saying that, you know, this documentary is not about Michael Jackson. It's not about Michael Jackson. And I wasn't really buying that up until I've started watching it. You really end up thinking more about the victim and about the possibility of this happening to someone rather than, oh, Michael, oh no, he did or he didn't. It really isn't about that. You start to think about how easy it is, for lack of a better term, for a coach who even coaches an under 14
side.
That's
like such a common thing these days. Like coaches are the new Catholic priests.
But how the little boys or girls in this team look up to the coach. At that age, you're still impressionable. You just want someone to like you. Yeah. And you want to make a good impression. And when this God in your eyes devotes more attention to you and actually says you are the world and you are amazing, what more do you want? That's how easily you get lured.
And you don't know what is and what isn't normal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, one of the boys also says how they would hold hands. He and Michael would hold hands in public. And to speak to the manipulation and the sick and twisted behavior of an abuser, or let's still say alleged abuser, Michael would go to the parent of these boys and say, you know, I don't feel comfortable that Jimmy loves holding my hand. And you know what people would think, so please tell him to stop. And that plays to the little boy's mind, like, wait, but I thought you would like this. And, you know, but they would go, they'd walk in public and they'd hold hands. And Michael would always stroke the palm of this little boy. How twisted.
But do you think, like, you know, I've also heard other people saying that, like, he's not here to defend himself. And it's an opportunistic production. And it's a very one-sided. Well, and
Ben
a lot of the stuff's not verified.
Ben called it Oprah's
witch hunt.
Witch hunt.
Oprah's witch hunt.
I think even if it is that case.
Do you think there's a possibility it's total bullshit, or are you completely sold personally?
I think there's smoke and there's definitely a fire. There's too much smoke for there not to be a fire,
you know? So yes, then
yes.
Come on, guys. I mean, we all knew when he was alive.
I would like the record to reflect, for the no one who cares, that I've never liked his music and always found him fucking creepy, him and Prince both.
Okay, but hang on a second. Like, speaking of his music, see, when did all of this happen? When did it start? I'm trying to work out ethically which songs can you and can you not. Because I know with R. Kelly, don't listen to any of his music, because that guy was just rotten throughout. But I mean, if we can still salvage Thriller,
and he was still singing about chicks.
If we can still salvage Billie Thriller, Jean, then I'm all about a girl. Then I'm all about boycotting the rest.
Yeah, you can still listen to Thriller, Off the Wall.
Billie Jean is
so basically like any Michael White music. Just no.
Yeah. The White phase was when when he had a black room, he was fine.
From the Bad album, that's when this started.
Which
from
one of them though?
God in the corner. There you go.
Michael Jackson's Bad album. What?
No.
Jesus.
Yeah, this is, it's, you know, and in conclusion as well, speaking of God, you were saying you've always found him creepy. What this also shows is there's no creep to it. You expect a molester to be, you know, dirty and slimy and
they're
sitting
among
in a corner.
Us. That's
they
the problem.
Are
Michael Jackson is not normal.
People. They're amazing.
That
people.
Thing looks like it's from another planet.
That thing.
And I'm also like, okay, from a parenting perspective, like I haven't seen it, so I'll take your word for the whole, you know, like building it up slowly and innocuously. But if you've got an 11-year-old and it's like, okay, well, I, a grown man, would like to have him come sleep in my queen size bed tonight, but you can be in the room next door. And then slowly the room gets further away. I'm like, no, not the room next door.
You see, but that's too blatant, Gord. It doesn't start off like that. It'll start off on one night where they're just playing board games. And one of the mothers even retold saying that sometimes when we were at hotels, I'd actually walk up to the door and listen. And all I would hear is Michael reading to him, and there would be racing cars on the floor, and they'd just be telling jokes. So she had that proof. She had that track record.
The thing is, he was a recording artist. He was playing a tape, meanwhile.
No, you don't know that. And then she would say it would happen gradually, where they're in Germany.
Ben finds this thing kind of hilarious.
Yeah. I don't. I'm just getting to the nuts and bolts of it.
I still find it so
the nuts.
Franken bean.
You know, then they'd be in a new city and it would be Michael's team who would say, sorry, the hotel is fully booked and we do want to make sure that you're in a suite, not just any shabby room. So the only suite that's available is, you know, three floors down. This, yeah. You know, it just happens so gradually. I understand. At first, I thought, wow, how naive of these parents. They would know better.
Yeah, can you imagine the guilt they're wrecked with now?
Yeah.
Well, in many ways, the parents were getting groomed in their own special way.
Of course they were.
Yeah.
Of course they were.
In my mind, he doesn't have a penis. He has a proboscis.
Oh, God.
And it extends out of an ovipositor.
Oh. I can tell you what he preferred. You know, his fetishes.
But I'll go on.
No, come on.
We're talking about kids. A long weekend. We can watch it all by ourselves.
No, go on. Tell us.
Okay, this is very crass. Give us a little. I'll tell you.
Go on.
So,
please don't.
Michael loved having his nipples played with.
Oh, God.
And
how many did he have?
Also.
Touch my nipples.
And he would also love the little boys just bending over and spreading their cheeks. Sorry, I'm not laughing. It's not
funny. Spread cheeks.
Yeah, that's what he'd like.
No, dude.
And
I'm going outside.
There are also little games that he used to play with.
Let's play a game.
When it comes to, for example, like oral sex in the
pool. Oh, man.
He would say like, oh, let's make it a game. Hold your breath while you go underneath.
Oh, dude, breath holding. Yeah. I sometimes get people to do the breath holding game. They're not kids, though.
So those were his things, huh?
Yeah.
Jesus, like, what a creep. All right, well, I know what.
You know where you'll find me this long weekend.
But Macaulay Culkin said
I got to watch it now. I mean, it's just horrendous, but I've got to watch it.
Macaulay Culkin said that none of that should happen, and it was always just the best time.
But Macaulay
and
Culkin.
And he's like godfather to
the white
kids that Michael Jackson genetically
apparently
produced.
Paris Hilton wanted to commit suicide after seeing this documentary.
He was in hospital a couple of days ago.
Also, some good came of it.
So...
I take that back. It was an inappropriate joke.
So,
Paris Jackson. I thought you said Paris Hilton. Because the world could do with less Paris Hilton. Is that not what you said?
Yeah. I said Paris Jackson.
No, I'm pretty sure you said Paris Hilton.
And you jumped on that, Gord. Julie knows it.
Yeah. All right, so...
Paris Jackson is somebody's daughter, and I would never want anything bad to happen.
So is Paris Hilton.
Paris Hilton's someone's daughter.
She's the child of darkness.
Okay, if Michael Jackson died in 2009, Wade Robson, the former choreographer whose allegations of abuse are at the center of a controversial new documentary, Leaving Neverland, wrote in his tribute to his friend, Michael Jackson changed the world and, more personally, my life forever. He's the reason I dance, the reason I make music, one of the reasons I believe in the pure goodness of humankind. He has been a close friend of mine for 20 years. Huh? His music... This is what he wrote. His movement, his personal words of inspiration, encouragement, and conditional love will always live inside of me forever. I will miss him immeasurably, but I now know he's at peace and enchanting the heavens with a melody and a moonwalk. Now, you see, what we've got to remember, he may have written that. That doesn't mean that he suddenly decided to change his tune. What happens is these people, these kids, are so embarrassed on one level. They don't want to admit
this. And it was mostly fun.
They might even... This is what Dr. Phil said in an interview I heard. And he's got a podcast as well. He said, what you got to remember is a lot of these kids, they might even, and it's embarrassing for them to admit this, they might have enjoyed it.
You do.
Because it feels good, he says. But that doesn't mean it's right.
Yep.
And he's quite right. So it must have felt powerful to be Michael, the apple of Michael Jackson's eye, right?
Yeah. Sure.
You're getting
that's
all this
like,
attention.
All jokes aside, that's how they do it. Like,
yeah,
they make it like you're the priest's favorite, and being in that like religious community is important.
And you're
the coach's
special
star athlete, and
you know you get to be an important part of the ceremony.
Yeah,
or you're in the coach's team, and the coach always
picks you first. Gives you extra coaching.
As a kid, that kind of status is just undeniably empowering. And then, of course, when they become adults later on, the last thing they want to do is admit that that wasn't a real friendship. They want to admit that they were just a sex object.
Yeah.
So they don't tell anybody. And then when they eventually do tell people, it's deeply
humiliating. Because it's not like physically forceful. Well, I mean, in some cases, obviously, it is. It's not like physically forceful. It's mentally manipulative.
Yeah, right. And they feel, did I participate?
Starting off your Wednesday morning with some morning pedophilia here on the Gareth Cliff Show.
Thank you, Michael Jackson.
There were two big lessons, though, that I got from this. The first is it seems quite basic, but sexual assault doesn't necessarily have to hurt. Yeah. So it's not, you aren't being forced against the wall and someone is ripping off your clothes and someone is hurting you in the process. No.
It's the same as psychological assault or emotional assault. Yeah. Assault doesn't always imply physical force or interaction.
You're pleasured and your body's responding in a certain way and that confuses you. And then the second takeaway that I got, and this I got as a result of...
You went through two different rounds of takeaways during this.
Yes, yes.
It's 4 hours long.
Gordon's very jealous.
Yeah.
The second takeaway that I got actually from the men now doing the interview with Oprah, and the one says, I even felt bad just as I was coming to this interview with you. Feeling bad as in I still feel like I'm betraying Michael. Yeah. I still have to deal with those feelings. And you think about how impressionable we all are at a young age and how he was really manipulated into, you can't tell anyone, you can't say anything about this, both our lives will be ruined. And that still is stuck with him as an adult. So going back to
And it
to
has
this,
ruined their lives because, first of all, they're psychologically scarred by it. But second of all, properly. Now there are all these legions of Michael Jackson fans who are accusing them of going after the money and being slimy. And why didn't they bring this up earlier? And why did they not testify against him when they had the opportunity while he was still alive?
Some
so you can
did
imagine.
Though, didn't they?
Yeah, but he also, remember, he settled with Geordie Chandler.
But didn't that guy come out after Michael Jackson died and said it was bullshit and that he was coerced into doing it by his parents
or something?
Listen,
I haven't watched the documentary, so I'm sure they cover some of this in it. But there it is. I mean, I do want to move on to the five things we need to talk about today. There's so much to get into. So City Power has apologized as Johannesburg's northern suburbs are still without power. By the way, I don't know why the northern suburbs especially deserve an apology, but I think generally...
Like the rest of the country is
important. Like Pravin yesterday was apologizing. He's the Minister of Public Enterprises, which has got to be the shittiest job in the whole world right now, because although part of this is Pravin's fault, he was in the cabinet while they were dismantling and hollowing out Eskom. He has a huge part to play in the fact that it's become this shell. And people like to say, well, Pravin's one of the good guys. And I don't believe that for a second. It's like saying Cyril's one of the good guys. They were all there in those meetings. Now, unless they were asleep or Jacob had rohypnoled them, there is no way that they didn't know what was going on.
They were all locked in a cabinet. I mean, how are they supposed to do anything about anything?
So Pravin was apologizing yesterday, and now it turns out the major fault in two substations brought on by the restoration of power by Eskom has left many areas dark outside of the planned load-shedding times. City Power spokesperson Isaac Mangena says residential areas are affected. Traffic is also backed up as a result. Yeah, yesterday.
Yeah, dude.
People were... It's just
you can't go anywhere.
It includes Fontainebleau, Randburg, and the surrounding areas, including Stradon Park. So mostly industrial areas. We apologize.
Yeah, we can pass them.
It's mostly
off.
Factories and just
businesses that the economy depends on and people's jobs and that crap.
He says, we apologize for the inconvenience to customers and motorists because the traffic lights are not working on most of the main roads. Well... Tell us about it, dude.
And also the dickheadery of South Africans always assuming they got to the line first. I watch very closely, and I know when it's my turn. And I'm like, the guy in front of me goes, and I get to the line, and then it's like me and two other people arrive at the same time. So I'm like, cool, I'm going to let you two guys go, even though we all arrived at the same time. And then someone behind them thinks they were there before me. And it's like, okay, there are two possible answers now.
Someone give her a hypnotic.
You are either a wanker who knows you weren't there first and wants to go first ahead of everyone else, or you're a shit driver because you weren't paying attention and you just don't know and now you're guessing.
But either way, you shouldn't.
Which is it? Are you a wanker or a terrible driver? Can we pull over and just you sign on the thing which you are? Because it is empirically factual that you were not first. Four people were ahead of you, but you went anyway. Because you're either a wanker or you don't pay attention when you drive.
All right, Gordo.
I want to start
you.
Keeping a list of
stuff that pisses Gordo off. Yeah,
it'll be a long list.
It really is getting long.
All right, so
you'd be not on the list though. So.
While we're on Eskom said on Tuesday night, that was last night, that it would continue with stage 4 load shedding on Wednesday. On Tuesday night, load shedding would be on stage 2 from 11 to 9. Stage 4 would be implemented on Wednesday from 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. This is due to what do you think? Shortage of capacity is what they're saying.
What does it actually mean? Like, what's not working? Because through most of summer, we had power.
Gord, there are two things that are going on here. Mm-hmm. First of all, we don't know the truth because Eskom have lied to us so many times.
That's okay.
So we're not sure. They're blaming their current lie is that it's Mozambique. It was that cyclone that hit Mozambique. Maybe true, but
which
that
caused what?
That's responsible for a tiny
5% of their capacity to be lost.
But that but shows like, you.
Was that to do with coal supply?
No. That's because of the Cahora Bassa Dam, and we manage. It's a backup system that we use sometimes to draw electricity off of their hydroelectric dams up there. Anyway, the point is, we're on such a knife edge that 5% makes a huge difference. Mm. In other words, we have no margin for error here. Eskom, if anything goes wrong, it's straight to load shedding stage 4. We're in huge shit. And Eskom don't know how to deal with this because they've fired all the competent people and the politicians have put in all the cadres and it's a disaster. It's been hollowed out by the Guptas. It's been hollowed out by this Tegeta coal company of theirs, which was made to supply coal, which was low quality, which damaged all the power plants. It's a mess. Kusile doesn't run properly. Madupe is not finished properly. I don't know what the story is, but there's so many lies that, first of all, we don't know what the truth is. And second of all, even if we did know what the truth is, government is so humiliated and embarrassed by all of this that they don't know how to address the problem. Because in addressing the problem, they're going to have to say...
admit fault in an election period.
They're going to have to admit fault. They're already being... I mean, I saw SABC News, believe it or not, of all the channels. SABC News took a whole lot of listeners' comments, which is dodgy and dangerous for them. They're a state broadcaster. They're pretty much beholden to the ANC.
Yeah.
Out of the 5 comments that they played out live on air, 4 of them were about how people are not going to be voting for the ANC this year because of this load shedding thing. I hope those people remember what they've said and actually go follow through with it. But these didn't sound like whiny Kugels from the northern suburbs. They sounded like black people who were pissed off
so
about
it. Wasn't Corin, Hazel, and Debbie
in the queue?
Not only am I in a queue at Woolworths, but also when I get home, there's going to be no power. And little Jaden is not going to get his cheesy puff because they've sold out because everyone's getting dinner from here because they can't cook tonight.
No,
that's Cyril Ramaphosa. I better sort this out.
All right, that wasn't them. Not that it would matter because they have as much right to complain as anyone else.
Sure. But they exercise it harder than most.
These people who were asked sounded to me like they were people from, let's just say, the part of the population that you would normally consider to be ANC stalwarts. So these are people who have changed their mind on the ANC. It's a big move. Anyway, the point is...
because electricity will illustrate the point. Or the lack of it will not illustrate.
Now, the ANC are going to have to admit a whole bunch of things. First of all, they don't know how to run anything, which is a deeply problematic situation for people who you put in charge of running everything.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, they'll have to admit that things like cadre deployment and affirmative action have failed hopelessly in the Eskom example. Third of all, they'd have to admit that giving the state more power is exactly the opposite of what we need to do because Eskom is completely state-run and state-owned, and it is a whole-scale disaster. And they'll have to also admit that the people that they thought were the competent ones, like Pravin and people like that, were also part of the problem a few months ago. And therefore, there is no exit for them. There's no workable solution where the ANC comes out looking good. And as a result, they will continue to lie their way through this.
Yeah, and focus on legacy, etc. Yeah, and play all to people's kinds emotions. Of
shit.
Yeah.
So get ready for more lies.
Because it's an emotional thing, voting for the government, not a practical results-based thing.
And in other news, the National Assembly has approved a list of SABC board candidates. So look forward to another politically appointed state-owned enterprise being dragged into oblivion by the National Assembly, who's approved the list of SABC board candidates. So here they are. Listen to these guys. Tell me how much you trust people on this list to bring you objective, impartial news, for example. I mean, it's one of the things the SABC is tasked to do. Don't even think about entertainment, because none of these names sound entertaining to me. So the House on Tuesday voted on a report from the Communications Portfolio Committee. It recommended 8 names, including anti-apartheid activist Seth Cooper and respected journalist Mary Papaya. I don't know who those people are.
Oh, Mary Papaya is
but
such
papaya
a great
is
name.
Something that you buy at the shop when you're hungry for breakfast.
And a Mary one is always uplifting.
Committee chairperson Hlengiwe Mkhize said the committee emphasized the representation of the demographics of the country, which is precisely what Eskom did when it fired a whole bunch of white engineers and brought in black ones, or black people who weren't engineers, just to fulfill the demographic necessities of Eskom. And look where that got us. Democratic Alliance, Pumzile Levandam said she wasn't happy with all the choices and objected to the appointment of Sats Cooper. This is not the kind of person who should be on the SABC board. We have written to the president to say that Sats Cooper must not be included. But the rest of the names you wouldn't notice or recognize either. So you're welcome to look them up. They're published.
Sorry, what's that about Sats Cooper?
I don't know. All we know is he was an activist. Now, I'm always a little bit nervous to put someone who doesn't have a job description into a job description.
What kind of demographic do you represent if your name is Sats?
Sats Cooper is an Indian man, if you're interested.
Oh.
But his surname is white and his first name, God alone knows Sats. Where that comes from. Yeah.
On the topic of bizarre first names, how in God's name did Mrs. Bryson, when her baby was born, look at him, hold him up to the light and go, Peebo! This is young Peebo.
Thanks for that diversion. Always nice to have you on the show.
I was thinking about funny names today.
I know. I like that. That's what we like about you, Gord. And we've got a comment here from someone. Oh, God, I love Gord.
Well, thank you, friend person.
Yes, isn't that nice?
Just right when Gareth was criticizing me. It's times like that that reinflate my deflated puff.
So look up the names if you're interested and have a bit of a glance at the SABC board list, because these are the people who will determine how those of us who don't have a choice about what we consume media-wise, poor people, people who are forced to watch SABC television and listen to SABC radio. I mean, what?
Dude, it's genuinely horrible. It's like, it's always
they're going to be
the
victims
poorest
twice.
People and the biggest parts of the majority. Like, the whole plan to deliberately dismantle and derail education so that people don't understand democracy well enough to make a logical and not impassioned choice. Yeah. It's just evil, and those are the people who have shitty TV. Because, I mean, you used to be able to watch, like, Dragon Ball Z and Issy Dingo. Like, because I was a student who smoked weed more than I studied way back in the day, and I used to sit at home with Kulani and watch Dragon Ball Z and Yo TV, and that was ETV. But we watched Issy Dingo religiously, and like, it was okay. Nowadays, like, it's min on SABC.
Well, in other news, two quick stories you need to know about, and then we'll get to the sport. Cape Town, hundreds of disgruntled SAPS members from Western Cape police clusters took to the streets to highlight their frustration at being overlooked for promotions. Now, I got to point out to the police that if everyone gets promoted, it means you're pretty much staying where you are.
Although you could get around that. So it's like, right, everyone gets a title increase plus it's annual increase time. So you're all getting increases like that. You could promote everybody by just giving them their regular inflation based. So like, right, you all get a raise and now you're senior, Mr. Dickface.
Many who joined the march, led by newly formed police and allied workers union, Sapawu, had to put in sick leave notes to explain their absence. The union had resorted to the demonstration as they had repeatedly written to Police Minister Begitele with no response. A sergeant who spoke on condition of anonymity said they'd been serving and risking their life for 15 years or more to witness people straight out of police colleges getting promotions. Well, I don't know how the police currently works, but it used to work like the military, in respect to the fact that the longer you were there and the more you knew, the likelier you were to get a promotion.
Merit-based, in other words.
Yeah, that doesn't happen in South Africa. Yeah. In South Africa, it's who you know.
Jokes aside, I can believe it.
Like, yeah, so I kind of have some sympathy for them if that's the case.
Because you do get a lot of hardworking, cool-ass police people.
And then another big Hollywood man has been fingered with sexual misconduct allegations.
These guys are in for it, huh?
Yeah, they really are. So this is a guy called Kevin Tsujihara, who's from Warner Brothers Entertainment. He's the chairman and chief executive.
Ooh.
He's going to have to step down in the midst of an investigation into sexual misconduct. He said, over the past week and a half, I've been reflecting on how the attention of my past actions might impact the company's future.
So that's kind of like a soft admission, because he's talking about past actions like it's a real thing. Mm-hmm. Because Neil deGrasse Tyson was recently cleared after the investigations into a couple of misconduct charges that he vehemently denied. Then production of Cosmos was stopped as a result, and one or two other things that he does were temporarily suspended, and now they're continuing with Cosmos production. But it always stains you. Like,
look, the problem is here that the allegation is itself a punishment.
Yeah, exactly.
Because without having any evidence, if people sniff around and they think you might be guilty of some, if someone alleges that
then
you did
something, exactly,
you're fucked.
And like, it'll always stick with you. Like,
so I would be very, very suspicious in that case of any allegation unless there's proof and unless the whole thing has been to court.
But it sounds as if he implies
believe, that I always believe her. I always believe the victim is deadly dangerous.
Oh, so dangerous. Even as much as, obviously, like, the whole movement generally has benefits. But the point is, it sounds as if this dude... kind of, that was a soft admission. Stuff I've done in my past.
No,
up until
like
his lawyers get a bigger part in this, they'll retract that.
Yeah.
They'll
but if you say, I don't want the company to suffer because of things I've done in my past, so I'm stepping down, it's kind of like different than saying, what?
No. All right. Other things we need to talk about are in the sport. Let's get to Ben. Ben, what do you have for us today?
The world's best amateur golfers playing in a pro event.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be names in the shirts of the Ashes players, and Ronaldo's crotch is in trouble again.
Always Ronaldo's crotch.
Yeah, Cristiano Ronaldo, as we know, he is the most famous sports person, I guess, in the whole world. He's got the biggest social media following. He's probably the richest as well, I think. Yes, no, yes, he is. Well, he scored all three goals in Juventus' stunning, thrilling, scintillating comeback last week against Atletico Madrid in the Champions League, to which he celebrated by making a gesture around his rape area. Sorry, his crotch. So he basically brought his hands towards his balls. And it was meant to be in response to Diego Simeone. He did exactly the same thing in the first leg when they beat Juventus 2-0. Now, Simeone said, look, Simeone got fined, okay? He got fined. And he said, look, it's something I did for the fans to show that we've got big balls, big cajoles. Cajones.
Cajones.
Cajones. And he said, this is just, it's not the nicest gesture, but it's what we do. It just shows that we had big balls to beat Juventus 2-0.
So, who's got a problem with this? Because soccer players have always done stupid shit when they score goals. Why would this suddenly become a problem? Is it because he was once accused of sexual shenanigans?
That's a good question, Gareth. That's a good question.
His balls are less appropriate than other balls.
Who's complaining about this? Feminists? Who is it?
Well, UEFA.
Why are they watching soccer?
UEFA is obviously under massive pressure to be consistent. Yes. Yeah, so there could be a ban. I mean, UEFA's going to assess
it. You've got to be kidding me.
And Juventus fans are like, what the hell?
Gareth Cliff just said that feminists shouldn't be watching soccer.
Of course not. Why should they be?
He's always tainting my
sports. Feminists are going to love that. They're going to watch soccer in their hundreds of thousands to defy
you.
When
last did you hear feminists love anything? And if you can answer that question, you've got 5 seconds.
I know feminists that love disagreeing, being right, lynching people who they don't like, and being upset about stuff. That's 5 things that they love.
All right, I admit defeat. Go on, Ben. On to you.
Yeah, so Ronaldo could be facing a sanction of some sort because he did this crotch-grabbing celebration thing.
Outrageous.
I mean, look, I think it's just bad PR from his sense because of the rape allegations. You shouldn't have any sort of attention around your middle area.
Yeah, he's got a tainted crotch now.
That's just me.
Tainted crotch.
I'm conservative like that.
Tainted crotch. Sometimes I feel I've got to gesture to my crotch. I've got to touch my crotch when I score these goals in front of you. I love my crotch.
So sorry, Ben.
You all must see my crotch.
So you know Test cricket's all about wearing the white clothing?
Yes.
Well, in the Ashes this year, starting in August, where Australia going over to England to get absolutely well and truly trousered, they'll be wearing names and numbers in the back of their shirts now. What a revolutionary move this is. ICC says to make the Test Cricket World Championship more engaging because this will be the start of the Test Series World Championship.
So let me guess, there are people, progressive people, who want to know who's playing and where they are, and they want the crowd to be able to identify people.
Well,
and then there's the people who like tradition and are like really pissed off because you should only wear white.
Well, they mostly hung over from last night's sherry, so I haven't seen any sort of derogatory comments just yet. But look, I mean,
in
the county championships, they play that. And the whole thing about Test cricket is they're trying to package it better. I know this whole packaging term.
Packages are a theme in the sport today.
They are. Well spotted, Gord. Well spotted. So, look, it's a bit of a non-story. It's just that it's the start of the Test World Championship. That's more what I'm getting at here. So, I'm all for it. I don't see any big problem here. If everybody watches Test cricket and there's more emphasis on what's going on, great.
It doesn't seem like it can harm the game in any conceivable way.
Unlike sandpaper, that harmed the game when Australia came here.
No, that was a problem.
So, yeah, totally okay with that. Last night, the Proteas played against Sri Lanka, and they must have thought it was a knockout match. because they completely bottled it towards the end. Sri Lanka 134 for 7. SA in response, they were cruising, they were always going to win, and suddenly they just did nothing at the end. So the game went to a super over.
What is a super over?
That's when you tie the scores in T20 Gord, and then you pick a batsman, two batsmen, and the other team picks a bowler, and you have a super over.
So, but
a super over. So you, like, you
how
play
do they
six
decide
balls.
Who gets the it's batsman?
Like, well, obviously you know you're going to pick your best batsman, the guy who scored
but
the most
runs
on the
day.
Does
everyone get to do one?
Like, no. So it's like a penalty shootout.
Not socialism, Gord.
No, I'm saying like what it's not so, a socialism. So do over. The batsmen have to? I'm asking legitimately. Do the batsmen have to get a certain amount of runs, and the bowlers have to prevent that, or do the bowlers have to get a certain amount of wickets? It doesn't feel like there can be a winner if both teams don't get to bat in the super over.
Yeah, maybe I didn't finish. Strange that.
Felt finished.
But essentially, you get a super over, as in both teams get to bat for an over. So it's like a penalty shootout. Both teams get an over each.
That's what I asked.
Yeah. But then you jumped in. So.
Sorry. Oh. No, you have trouble finishing, Ben.
It's kind of difficult. It's difficult walking out of a door when a guy's pushing you into it, Gord.
I don't understand your door metaphor, Ben.
Yeah, so there we go. Dreadful. And David Miller came out with Rusty van Dissen, and they scored 14. So that was very good. And then Imran Tahir was tasked with bowling a super over, and boy, did he bowl it well. Sri Lanka just had no chance whatsoever. The match was won by the Proteas. So, tomorrow... No, when is tomorrow? Tomorrow is... No, Friday. Friday's the next T20 at Centurion. Oh, what a lekker scorp that's going to be.
Are you going to go, 6 Ben?
6 p.m. No, Gareth, I'm away on a romantic weekend this weekend. Oh. And then on Sunday, 2:30 at the Wanderers, SA versus Sri Lanka. The third and final T20. And then from there, Otis has to go, right, I'm taking you blokes to the World Cup. He's going to make the big... He's the Kajani's there. He needs Ronaldo's. Yeah. He needs Ronaldo's gesture there to take his best 15.
Right.
The world's best amateur golfer is a guy called Gord.
Luke.
Akshay Bhatia. Akshay Bhatia is the world's best amateur golfer. He's 17, and he is playing in his first pro event this weekend. Now he's still an amateur, so if he whatever he does, he's not going to make any money. But he's playing the Valspar Championships, and he's gone in there. Again, with the Ronaldo gesture going, I'm not here to compete, I'm here to win. So this dude...
When you are an amateur and you play a tournament and there are a bunch of pros,
yeah,
and you win, you don't get the money.
Zero.
Yeah.
Zero cents.
So the money just rolls over to the pros.
Completely. Now, if you go onto YouTube and type in No Days Off Akshay Bhatia, you can watch an entire 10-minute documentary about this guy. It's fascinating, okay? So he doesn't give a toss about anything. He thinks he'll be the world's best golfer one day. He's not going to college. He says, I don't like school. I'm not that smart. I like being outside and playing golf. To which his dad, who's clearly seeing big money, is like, yeah, good call. Let's turn pro straight away.
Right.
So he's going to finish school, and the plan is straight away turn pro. Now, Akshay, I get you. I hear you. Bro, I'm done with this whole plan. But... You're going to be 18 on the PGA Tour. Well, you hope if you get there. You know how hardcore it is being an adult? He's going to have to travel. Girls are going to be in his hotel room. Mm-hmm. His dad's going to be taking his money. He's going to discover booze. He's going to be brokenhearted. He's going to be an absolute emotional wreck. Even if you don't like school, go to college.
No, but this is good, Ben, because this will show people that you don't get something for nothing. And I don't think, you know, let his life be an example to the rest of us. Let us see how someone can waste their life by making bad decisions. Even if you're talented.
I really think it's a bad decision because PGA Tour, I mean, you think cricketers are rough. A lot of golfers are rougher than that. And now this tour life is hardcore. You're constantly moving. You've really got to try to focus all the time when you have nothing around you that supports you. Golf is a hard game. It really is. So at least, I don't know, go get a couple of like... strange handies in a car park outside of Denny's, you know, while being a college student. Because if you got to then wake up and go play a pro golf after that, it's just going to be awkward.
Be laughing with Akshay Bhatia when he's in 3 years' time accepting his endorsement from Nike, wearing his green jacket, going, thank God I didn't go to college. The Rusties are so much better on the PGA Tour.
And then we'll pick it up then. I just think this guy, you need to think about golf is that you can be so hugely talented, hit the ball like nobody else. You need to be an adult and you need to be balanced and you need to be a hardened individual to actually be a good golfer because golf is mental. It's a mental game. And the lessons that you learn through the progression of talent to college to then being a professional, because that word professional is a big key here.
How do you get to be a professional? Like in boxing, you have to have amateur fights, then you have to be granted a license.
Yeah, you qualify.
So in this, he has to actually do things to get professional.
I can turn professional tomorrow. It's what I do with it. It's the important thing. Because it doesn't mean anything golf. You're professional.
But I'm saying, if he just declares himself professional, he's playing anywhere, then he can get the winning money.
He could. Okay, he could. Because
odd not to.
He's got a sponsor's invite, and he's going to turn pro at the age of 18, I think. Anyway, so this is going to be a lot of hype around him this week. And I think that's rather interesting. And final story before we get on to Sears. Amazingly positive feature for today. The Tokyo Japan Olympics chief, Tsunekazu Takeda, has resigned. Because
sexual molestation.
No, there's allegations of corruption, which are not true, but he'll not have this allegation, and he will not cause any sort of fuss.
Yeah.
So he literally is stepping down. He says he's not going to run for re-election. It pains me to have created such a fuss, but I believe it's my responsibility to serve the rest of my term. So he's going to work until June, and then he's just going to step down. He's horrified that anyone could have any corruption charges
against
him.
So before anyone's taken him to court or taken him to jail or anything else, he's already got out of the way.
Because Japan is a country of honor.
Right.
How refreshing.
So here they prove your corruption and you don't step down. Yep. There they suggest it and you go, oh my God, I'm embarrassing this company. I'm so sorry someone accused me of something I didn't do. I apologize for ruining everyone's day.
He looked horrified at the press conference when he made this innocent
announcement. He does look genuinely shocked. There's this very amenable looking grey haired Japanese gentleman, probably in his 50s or 60s, and he looks like someone just told him that his son is gay.
Why would that be bad?
It wouldn't be a bad thing, but it would be news, Gareth. It would be like, oh, wow, that's a hell of a thing.
That's quite some imagery.
Yeah, that is that's just sport, mostly, for today. I won't see you on Friday. I'm going to be away, but I'll catch up again.
No, we're not
on
here on Friday.
Oh, wow.
We're not here on Friday, so don't panic,
we'll
Ben.
We'll be here on Monday.
Yes. Here on Monday.
All right, over you, Sia.
This is quite something cool. You know how the stokvel culture is really, really big here in South Africa?
Yes, huge. It's an undercurrent and an underpinning of our economy that people have to take seriously. You know how stokvels work, by the way? Does everybody know?
Do indeed.
Sure.
Okay.
Let's just explain in case there is someone who doesn't and they don't want to feel like an idiot. You know how all the kids in the class go, oh, we know what that is, let's move on. And you're like, oh, shit, I need to know.
Right.
All right, so stokvel basically, like, let's imagine you and 12 of your friends, or let's say you and 11 of your friends for the purposes of this example, decide you're all going to contribute to the stokvel. So every month you put in $100. If January is Ben's month, he gets the pool for January.
Right.
If my month is February,
you win another household entertainment facility. You get a tennis court.
But this is the point, right? Because for a lot of people, the problem is cash flow. Mm. They don't ever have enough to buy a TV or a fridge or anything else. So if it's your stokvel month and you are waiting for November, you budget basically. You put your $100 in every month for the stokvel, but you get your lump sum.
And they
in
get
November.
More of a serious bulk buying power. Like
absolutely.
The price of your share of the thing becomes way less than if you went and bought a small bag yourself, because the stokvel have bought, like, from the distributors or the wholesalers, like, huge quantities of.
That's right.
Exactly.
So it's a really good system.
It's a system of kind of communal
saving.
Shopping.
And,
yeah, correct. So whether we like it or not, it works for a lot of people, and it's the only way that they can buy things.
And the suppliers, like the macros of the world, they like invite the official stokvels and they make a day for them, and they try and like court them. They try and woo them to do their annual or whatever it is quarterly top-ups. Mm. They have like stokvel day, and they like, you get food, lunch, the senior stokvel people get treated like royalty to come and do the shopping there.
So I like that. With that said, there's an interesting and rather inspiring trend that's coming out of Khayelitsha with this whole stokvel as well. So the entire thing is, we know the state of the country, we know how bad things are, we know how a lot of people are stuck on the bottom end of things, and these group of women have said, you know what, screw it, I'm done with relying on government. We are going to help ourselves and we are going to build ourselves houses. So a group of women from Khayelitsha have come together to make a stokvel with a difference. They call themselves Masake ladies. Masake means let's build together. And they pull their money together to build themselves houses. I think it's so awesome. They've started in Jan of this year, and the stokvel currently has 12 members. And every single month, they each contribute 2,450 rands. And with that money, they buy materials, they rotate through members one at a time, and the members decide amongst themselves whose turn it is for the monthly lump sum payment. And the founding members actually all met originally from a food stokvel. And they said that, hold up, you know, we have this food stokvel, but really, you know, it's not the most important thing because we don't even have a roof over our heads. So they started getting quotations. They went to hardware stores, as you were saying, Gord. They spoke to all of these big suppliers to get some sort of, you know, some sort of incentive. And they're able to now, you know, buy themselves houses and plots of land. And they just said, one in particular, Dora Mkenu, said, "I'm tired of staying in a shack that leaks when it rains. I want to sleep peacefully when it's raining. I've been doing stockfall for food for more than 15 years. And I have nothing to show. But this will have good results because in no time, my house will be done." So one of the ladies actually received her material this past weekend and has started building her four-roomed house. And the members of the group have chosen, you know, to wear even uniforms every month when they meet.
Yeah.
And it's just, I think, an inspiring trend coming out of the largely dire situation that we have in our country.
These women
are saying, not on our watch. We don't care to complain anymore. We're making it happen for ourselves.
They want to be self-sufficient, which is what everyone should aspire to be, right?
And it's a bloody great idea. Like, there was a gent we had on here a long time ago who's done very well with like an app-based collectivized farming where you can buy
share in a cow,
all of this kind of thing. It's like so innovative and so clever, and it's like, it's anytime an idea is truly brilliant, I mean, unless it's particle physics, which no one's going to think of themselves, but most brilliant ideas you go, why didn't I think of that? And it seems completely obvious because it's such a good idea.
So kudos to these ladies who are standing up in there, no, just making things happen. That's what I said by Sophie this morning.
I'm not ignoring the messages. We'll get to them in the next hour. We'll also take your calls. You know what to do. If you want to message us, 0797482090. There's plenty of good stuff still to come. And we're going to catch up with the Tuli Madonsela Foundation. You know that Tuli Madonsela started a foundation called Tuma. And we'll be hearing about what they're doing. Public holidays are often time for people to pause and reflect on what the day is actually about. And the Tuli Madonsela Foundation will be doing more than just reflecting. Tomorrow, they'll be having a series of powerful conversations around human rights and the power they have to impact change. And we'll speak to Sean Nell from the foundation to find out a little bit about what that's all about. Plus some stuff in the news and loads of other good stuff. All on the way, cliffcentral.com.
This is cliffcentral.com.